You are listening to Dream Work with me, your dream therapist, Jennifer Kaplan. In each podcast, we will hear a dream together. I will listen to it for the first time with you. You will begin to see the kind of questions to ask and the way to listen for meaning in the answers. This podcast will help you begin to understand your own dreams and see and hear them differently. Hopefully, you will feel how all our dreams are steeped in meaning and a rich well of resources for self-study and self-actualization in its most gentle form. Today's dreamer is named Raquel, and she's 34 years old, and she's married with a two-year-old, just to give you context for whatever is coming up. And I'm very excited to hear your dream.
Why, thank you for having me, Jennifer. So my dream is going to be a reoccurring situation. I think from what other people have told me, they also have similar dreams. So essentially, and I just had another one last week. I think I have one about once or twice a month.
Wow.
And it is that I'm my current self, my age now, yet somehow I'm back in university and the people around me tend to shift. So this is the first one where my husband, who is actually from a very different country across the world, was in the same class with me. So I'm back at university. I think I have dropped a class. And next thing I know, I am being told that I have an exam tomorrow, which the tomorrow tends to happen within 10 minutes. And I have got to learn the entire context of the class for this exam because it's a pass-fail. And I am just freaking out and trying to absorb all the information while the people around me, and say for this one is my husband, who did the same thing, had no problems with it. They were almost partying going into this exam. And here I am thinking, I thought I dropped this class last semester. How do I have this final? And I've got to pass it. And me being me, who struggled with school a lot, really wanted to do perfect on this exam. And so I go into the exam room and I start writing, and the writing turns into multiple choice, and then it just goes into gibberish. And just as I think I finished, I wake up.
Okay. And you are not woken up by the dream. You wake up from the dream.
I wake up from the dream. Yes.
Okay. Pass, fail. That's what jumps out at me. Mm-hmm. Do you know that dynamic in your life? You either get it right or you get it wrong. It's like a winner takes all, loser loses all.
I feel like I do, but at the same time, I'm very much the type of person that it's okay to fail at certain things. I've had my fair share at failing certain things. I've also had my fair share of failing classes and also not going to an exam because I'm just spent. But you know, when I'm conscious and I'm thinking more so like, just do your best. That's usually how I live my life. And so these dreams, they always shake me and I always remember them so vividly and so clearly. And what is it? I've now been graduated for over a decade. So it's just, don't know why it keeps happening.
It keeps happening because you put yourself to the test. You keep putting yourself to the test, and the stakes are pass or fail. That's why it keeps happening. And whatever it is in your world that you think you could totally fail at or totally pass at, it's causing this kind of anxiety and distress. There isn't a way to prepare for the life that we live besides consciousness. There isn't, you know, ruminating about the future and worrying about all the terrible things that can happen will not prepare you for those things when they come. You will have spent years just thinking about things and not being here. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, listen, if I could instruct my clients to worry more than do better in the future, I'd do it. Like, it just doesn't work.
No.
And because we're animals, you know, we have a nervous system. We tend to think of ourselves as above the animal kingdom, but we really haven't evolved much past that. Our nervous system, once it's triggered, we disassociate. That's the tendency for humans. Some people fight and some people flee, but it's rare. If you grew up in an environment where there was fighting, you will likely fight. But most of us disassociate. And if you think about like the mouse hanging in the cat's mouth, playing dead, that's our version.
Mm, that's interesting.
So the mouse isn't really dead. As soon as the cat drops it, it runs off, right?
Yeah.
But we kind of check out. And unfortunately, we're not built well to return to normal. So anxiety that's self-inflicted, where we've decided this is something we really have to be afraid of and worry about, actually affects our nervous system. And it tells us like we're about to be eaten by lions. You know, it sends some message of danger. Our blood thickens. You know, we prepare to form scabs quickly. We disassociate. Our vision and our hearing change a little bit in order to protect us from the thing that we are telling our body is coming.
You'd think we'd be more prepared for it.
Well, that's what I mean by we need to remember we haven't evolved much past animals. And, you know, when we observe them, you know, freeze, like you've seen a cat freeze, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. That we have the same instinct, but we do it to ourselves. And we don't realize we're in a feedback loop, you know, where we're actually not thinking well. You know, that's the thing I really try and help my clients see, that you will not do your best thinking if you tell yourself the terrible thing and that you have to get it right or you're going to get it wrong. And this is how you have to think about it. You have to think about it all the time and you have to wake up in the night and think about it. And if you're not thinking about it, you're not doing your job.
You know, it's so funny because I also feel like on a day-to-day basis, that's the advice I would give someone who came to me if they were going through anxiety. It'd be like, there's no point, just, you know, and then yet there are these subconscious dreams, I guess, that keep reoccurring in the sense that.
Well, I also think there is an emotional baseline of failure that needs processing.
Probably.
I think you're carrying some weight of meaning around, going back a little bit, the school system was not designed to help children. It was designed to house children. And it's really important to know, you know, when you take your child to school, they might receive instruction, but the one thing they for sure are going to get is they're going to stay in that building.
Yes.
That's the for sure thing. Everything else is totally up for grabs. You can have a terrible teacher. You can have a bully in your classroom. You know, you can really not be able to understand the way a person speaks, right? Because you live in a household where nobody speaks like that. So that's you can't follow what they're saying. Anyway, they set it up as a pass-fail situation. Like they're not going to kick you out of the building, as I'm sure you know. Even if you fail, you're still going to be housed.
You're going to be kept there even longer. You're going to be in detention.
Right, exactly. Like that,
which I was there a lot for.
A lot. But the message that, you know, you're either good or you're terrible, is a very poor message for children to receive because, again, if you're triggered by it, you don't think well, so you can't perform well. So the more anxious a child is inside of that house, schoolhouse, the less likely they are to do well. And there's more and more understanding of that now. You know, our little ones are going to have more conscientious instruction around triggering them, but it's still real, right? That you have to protect your child from having their creativity shut down because they're anxious about performance. And it isn't a performance. I had a really hard time because I did very well. And what I noticed was, I'm going to cry a little bit, how much it upset certain people in the room. you know, the teacher would like hold up my exam and I could feel, because I'm an empath, how much it hurt other people who weren't doing well. And I grew to really dislike the feeling, and I had to do some work on it myself, because it's not nice to be the person who makes other people feel like they're dumb.
Yeah, especially when you're just doing your own
I'm
thing.
I'm just doing, right? What I'm supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. which is, as you know, do well, yeah. or do poorly. You know, this is the instructions.
Yeah, you're either on the lower end or the higher end. Yeah. The sweet spot's the middle.
Right, but they don't praise you for being in the middle.
No.
At all.
You just get to be the one to say, surprise.
No, in the middle, they tell you, you could do better.
Yeah,
that's what true. They say. You could do better. And it's really poor instruction, because if you think about what you're trying to develop, which is an interest in learning, this is not how.
No, you're constantly being compared. It's just, there's no way you can live up to the expectation when the expectation isn't even about you.
Exactly.
It's about someone else.
Right. So, you know, when it was time to go to university, I wouldn't even consider a university that gave marks. I wanted to go to a university where that would be taken off the table and I would never hear it again and never think that again or feel like that again. And, you know, if they gave marks, that was fine, but I didn't want to receive them. So that's how I ended up at Sarah Lawrence.
I usually just said, did I pass?
Right. But again, that's in the dream,
yeah.
right? This terrible feeling of either or. I'm either gonna go forward or I'm gonna be held back.
That's true. That's true, actually. Yeah. And I had both. I had one extreme or the other. It depended on the class. I had several classes dating back to when I even went into junior high. I remember I had to repeat grade 6 math. Grade 11, I had to do function and relations twice a day. Grade 12, I was told to not even put calculus on my schedule or I wouldn't get into university. I remember when I finally got the opportunity to go to FITM out in LA, CAD to me, like computer programming, I had to take that 3 times. Sure, give me a pencil. I can draw anything you want. But give me a mouse and a computer screen, can't do it. And then there were other things that I just...
Instead of can't do it, could you say, I have no aptitude in that area?
Yes. Actually, I think that's a better word for it. I didn't have aptitude for it.
Right. I mean, that's
the thing. I
didn't, and
I tried. It wasn't from lack of trying. It was probably the classes I tried the most in and studied the most. And I would memorize textbooks and then come the exam or come the test. It's like I never even opened it.
You had white page.
Yeah.
Yes, white page syndrome.
And then there were other courses that, I could do them in my sleep.
Right.
No problem.
And again, this is, you know, when there's like this river running through you of the things that you can't do.
Yeah.
But what I would prefer is for you to stand in the river and just be grateful that there are so many things you can do.
Yeah.
And the schooling got it wrong. It wasn't you that got it wrong.
I think the schooling always got it wrong. I actually have to agree with that. And I think I said that as a kid too. I mean, it wasn't until about second year, and this also might be a bit of a base where my dream comes. I had a bit of a mental breakdown in second year. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I was in a bunch of different classes and I didn't end up going to 4 out of 5 of my final exams. I just said, enough. I can't do this to myself. I need to breathe. And if I need to take an extra year, I'll take an extra year. And that's what I did.
They didn't just let you write the exams later?
No, I refused. I just didn't show up.
No,
I didn't show up. I took the academic probation and I went in for a meeting and I just said, give me one more year of chances. I'm going to not even prove it to you. I didn't care about proving it to the school. I was a number to them, literally, right?
Actually,
It was more for me and my happiness. I've always been a little selfish on that end
That doesn't sound selfish.
You know, well, not selfish. I guess my generation, we think it's selfish. Now there's this whole expression and acceptance and everything. But I've always been one to pursue my own happiness. And to me, the school system got in my way.
Yes, it did.
I loved certain courses. I could have sat in courses. I could be a professional student if I got to handpick every single course and syllabus I could take. I would do it for my whole life. I love to learn. Mm. But certain standard, like I hate this, you have to take a science in order to graduate. Yes. Yeah, but I'm in arts.
Right.
I don't have the aptitude science.
Exactly.
Give me drama. Give me English literature. Give me film. Give me anything in that world, painting, sculpture, pottery, you know, the dramatic arts. I'm your girl. Give me languages, ancient civilizations, history.
Right. But the patriarchy designed
wants me to take chemistry?
No.
And physics? Why?
It wants to keep us down. It wants us to know that we're not as great as we think we are.
I look myself in the mirror and see that. It's either you're great or you're not.
I don't know how you could look in the mirror and not think you're great. That's shocking.
That's very nice. That's very nice. We all have our little devils on our shoulder, though, don't we?
Well, I think it's connected.
Mm-hmm. You can't have one without the other. It's balance.
No, I mean, I think that there's, for you, the dream is asking you, you were always good at so much, and the institutions forced you to feel all the time what you couldn't do and what you weren't good at in a way that tampered with your serenity. And it's still tampering with your serenity because you haven't figured out where to put it.
I'm like, I just got shivers. Like that seems pretty on the bone there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the other partying people in the dream.
Yeah, they just seemed so laissez-faire, and it's okay. It's okay. Everything will work out. But in reality, I'm the one saying it's okay. Everything will work out. So maybe they're reflections of myself.
Everything
also.
And everyone in the dream is you. Everything and everyone in the dream is you. It is impossible to dream about what you are not. It's not possible. This is your imaginary world created by you, written for you to see yourself and know yourself. So you have this, you know, pretty populated side mm-hmm. that's very laissez-faire, right?
I've got a lot of sides then.
Well, hopefully, yes. I mean, hopefully we all do. I mean, who wants to be, you know, just one way, one color, one?
That's true.
But I also think there's some other messages in the dream. You are your age that you are now mm-hmm. back there, mm-hmm. right? Which signals to me that you're spending time in this time back in that time.
Interesting.
And so what I would suggest is that you do a ritual and, you know, it's private. It's just for you. It's not just for anybody to witness. And you collect some symbols from this time, both of your success and of what you would call your failures. And I think you probably have some somewhere. My inner self is telling me you have
There's a few popping into my brain right now.
So you spend time with all of them and you grieve that you let the institution make you feel this way for so long that you actually came to believe it as true. Mm. Because
grieving's an interesting word.
Yeah. Let this happen to me because, you know, I was a good student essentially, and I believed the, you know, party line.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, Narishkeit. It's mm-hmm. not worth anything.
Because really, looking back, and I remember, you know, my parents were so supportive. I had siblings that didn't need to crack open anything, and they were just brilliant.
No.
And here I was, brilliant, out on the street, but not necessarily
they
with
They weren't.
This.
They had an aptitude, like I did, mm-hmm. to work the system in such a way that you did well, always. Mm. And I am not happy about that. I hurt other girls. I went to an all-girls school by being that girl. And I didn't know until I knew how wrong it was. And I was trapped in the same way that you were trapped.
You were peg-holed.
Right.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out of it. I was that girl. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't think that there's, I mean, there was also the girl in the class who never could pass.
Yeah.
You know, who just dragged along, you know, crying in the back of the classroom, always with papers everywhere. And, you know, if I tried to help her, she was just like, not you.
No. She would be intimidated.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and I, you know, I just feel like that's the system.
That is the system.
It's not you. Mm-hmm. It's the system. So you kind of have to do a ritual to divorce yourself from this system. The system doesn't own you anymore. If you want to be a student, you're going to go in a totally different direction. If you're going to go study something, you know, you're going to like inhale it with love, mm-hmm. right? Not decide.
And take from it what I want to take from it too.
Right. And not care yeah, and also not care about the mark, whatever, if there's a mark. I mean, you know, God, I hope there isn't in the next thing you decide to learn.
No, but what I did learn, and going back to my parents being so supportive, because they really were. If I needed help, they got me all the help. And I'll never forget coming home with a 70 on something. And the teacher goes to my mom, well, the other kids got 90. And my mom goes, yeah, but she earned every single percentage of that 70. And those 93% students, their parents did that job for them. You know, she was great. And it's funny because this is really where you do see the rift with the subconscious and the conscious going through this now, just thinking
yeah,
about this,
yeah.
is that I was very, and I believed her that, is this really going to make a difference? Is the 70 or the 90 truly going to make a difference for you in 10 years?
Right.
Do you think it's really going to differentiate yeah. where you end up?
But it is, mm-hmm. but not in the way you thought.
No.
Right. That's the thing. It's like, you know, taking it from the man and having this terrible feeling about yourself that you have to carry because they tell you to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have to. You don't. No. You can actually divorce. I like the word divorce when I'm working on letting go of, you know, things in the self that if you let that energy go, it can go be something else. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really, truly tell the universe, I set this down and I leave this with you. I no longer wish, for example, in my case, to smoke cigarettes. Mm-hmm. I'd like this energy to turn into something else and have it grow and flourish and bloom and not be about me harming myself, which I needed to do for years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I let it go finally. Finally, finally, finally.
Congratulations. That's a big one.
Yeah, but we can all really, you know, function that way.
Yeah.
Like really look at stuff and be like, why would I carry around that I'm a failure? For what possible good? What energy am I bringing into my life and into my marriage and to my child if I carry this? Like, this is no good for me. I don't like it.
And I really don't want to do that for my kid.
Really 100%.
Don't. I want him to know that. Just because he might not be great at one thing doesn't mean he's not going to be great at another. And that, you know,
well,
the world is really our oyster, but I think it's also a little, if I may say so, I feel like it's a little easier now.
Yes,
to see that.
That's what I was saying. Our kids have it a little bit easier yeah. Than it was. But at the same time, you know, I told my children, you're going to take what you like and you're going to leave the rest. Ultimately, that's what it's going to be. I killed myself to get the marks that I got. I studied all weekend, you know, I didn't do things that mm-hmm. I could have done. And I just didn't. I studied. So what do I remember of any of it? I remember the plays. Mm-hmm. I remember the lunchroom. I remember sitting on the ground in the hallway laughing with my girlfriends. I have no recollection of anything that I read, studied, or wrote. None. Interesting. So what was its purpose? What was its purpose? And, you know, by the time I got to Columbia, all I really wanted was the piece of paper so that I could go work.
So you could go work.
You know, so I was like, what do I have to do to get the piece of paper? And I'll do that. I'll get the piece of paper and that's it.
I remember having a very similar thought with FITM when I actually had first gone for design.
Can you tell our listeners what FITM is?
FITM is, it's an abbreviation of Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. It's in Los Angeles, and it's kind of the West Coast equivalent of Parsons
right.
Design School right. in New York. Yeah. And that was actually a very fun time for me because that was after my 5 years at Western, because yes, I did do an extra year after that.
Right.
And I only applied to both those schools. And all I would hear is that you'll never get in, you'll never get in, you'll never get in. And I got early acceptance to both.
Well, good. Yeah. I mean, because ultimately, you know, I don't believe that grades can steer us off our path.
No, I think if we're destined to do something, I actually have an issue with the word destiny versus hard work and making your own chance. But I genuinely believe that there is a thread we could pull on that does kind of guide us in the right direction. Your heartstring, fate, whatever you want to call it. I knew from a very, very, very young age that I was destined to be in the fashion world in some capacity. Mm-hmm. I had a passion for it. I had a knack for it. I had a mom who could, you know, sell ice to an Eskimo and looked like the Queen of Sheba doing it. I had an aunt who was killing it in the design world mm-hmm. in New York, who inspired me
so much.
Thoroughly. I'll never forget. We went to France for my sister's bat mitzvah, and we met my aunt at Paris. She was at Paris Fashion Week, and I was like, that's it. I have to be in this world. And funny enough, now I manage a great boutique in the mm-hmm. heart of Toronto, and I do all the visual merchandising for it too. And, you know, hopefully one day I'll get into the buying of it mm-hmm. and everything. But I, you know, I'm still predominantly in sales, and I go home every day being like, I don't know what else I could do. This is it. This is it. This is what I love. It's what I'm good at. And I'm so glad I drowned out the white noise towards the end and just kind of followed my dreams, even with the failing of several classes and having to repeat them.
I really do want you to stop framing it that way.
Yes. Sorry.
Even though the system didn't serve me and I never got the support that I needed to do well.
It's clearly imprinted in me that I think I can't when it's just a low aptitude. You're right.
Well, you have other aptitudes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, not everybody has all the aptitudes.
Yeah.
You know, there, I can't do math. You know, I have to do it because I do my own accounting, mm-hmm. but it's torture.
Yeah.
And every time I put a column of numbers and add it all up, I get a different number, like over and over again.
I have the same issue.
Right.
Just so, can't do it.
Oh, well, I can do mm-hmm. other things. It's fine. I don't have to be good at everything. And that brings me to the other thing I wanted to talk about. When you receive the test, mm-hmm. you understand it as words, but then it turns into gibberish.
Complete. Yes.
And nothing in the dream is a mistake, right? And the gibberish part, I think, because it comes at the end, is really for you to understand the messages you received were nonsense. They made no sense. They were nonsense. Gibberish.
Complete. Yeah.
And, you know, we tend as children to look at the adults, believe what they say. You know, it takes a really long time to learn that people will lie to your face. And not only that, but people are colonized. They'll serve the patriarchy.
Absolutely.
They'll not know that what they're doing is incredibly traumatic or totally wrong or really upsetting because they've literally been colonized to believe this is how you behave with children. And you and I have to protect our children from those people. We have to tell them that person, unfortunately, is not with us here on the planet of Earth. They are off somewhere else serving some false god. And it's their journey. They're neither bad nor good, but you cannot receive information from them and swallow it whole. Everything has to be parsed through.
Yeah.
But there will always be, you know, I think every year there's one really good influence on your child that you're really grateful for, and maybe that's it. That's the takeaway.
That's still a win.
Yeah, exactly.
And this crazy life, that's a win.
I'm telling you this because that's how I want you to see it. You were able to sustain the part of yourself that is very laissez-faire, is, you know, a party girl, happy, you know, I know what I want, I know how I'm going to do it. The part that's missing is that you still endow those people with sense. And they don't deserve it. They haven't gotten the system in such a way organized that makes any sense.
So how do I take that power back in a way, you know, for myself? I guess it's because at this point, it almost seems like when something's shoved down your throat enough, it becomes self-inflicting, right?
It could. And I think it might have. But in the ritual, you could pull it out if necessary. You know, I've done a lot of physical movement in ritual to try and rid myself of things that I think are, you know, toxic, and mm-hmm. I don't need them. But, you know, they might have been imprinted on me. So, you know, I wake up with an idea about myself and I'm like, oh, you know, why do I feel unhappy about the day? Where'd that come from?
It's like it doesn't even give you a chance.
Yeah. But, you know, if you have stuff from your childhood, you know, that, for example, is trauma in school. And these are little T traumas, not big T traumas, but they do hurt. They really hurt.
Well, it builds little holes. I guess building is the wrong word. It
cuts
holes into your self-esteem and into your belief. And, you know, I'm very lucky to come from an entire tree full of family who have confidence and who work hard and who love hard and are family people, friends people, and they have a good, on the outside, I'll say, what seems to be a very good balance and belief in oneself. And obviously that's surface level, just looking in. But I'll say it outwardly. And confidently, not to repeat myself, I'm a very confident person. So when I get these reoccurring dreams like this, I really just wake up being like, what? Like,
well, what did happen? It's sort of, I
use
the phrase emotional archaeology, you know, because we go on a dig and we try and find the thing that's causing the disturbance. And when you do archaeology, you want to save that thing and have a good look at it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to like throw it, you know, like, what else can I get? Mm-hmm. But, you know, in your story, there's this buried place and it's college where it really got cemented, where you had this, I just can't. I would rather do a whole other year than face how I feel about this. And instead of in that moment realizing this system will not work for me no matter what I do, it never has and it isn't going to, you pushed yourself to make it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that you got, I don't think gave you the thing you wanted, because you had the thing you wanted before any, oopsie, oh dear, now I'm going to be in trouble. I banged the mic. The thing that you wanted, you had from the beginning. You had a calling from the beginning. You didn't need any of this.
No.
It was just the piece of paper.
You know, I was, I never wanted anything like that. I was definitely more, I don't want to say forced, but bribed to do my undergrad.
No.
In a way, you know, my parents, I think what it comes down to is an education. You know, I'm Jewish. We learned with the Holocaust that it doesn't matter what you have, anything and everything can be ripped away from you in a moment's notice, except an education. The knowledge that you attain throughout your life can be brought with you everywhere you go. And that was a big thing for my family. Get your undergrad. Out of everything in life, no, there's never too much education that you can get. You can never acquire too much knowledge, and no one can ever take that away from you. So that's something you have to have.
Right. However, there are universities that you can go to that don't have grades. Mm-hmm. And
if only I knew that back then.
Exactly. And, you know, the system itself harmed you. It wasn't, you know, wanting an education that harmed you. You mm-hmm. got stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not like you didn't get stuff.
I got a lot out of it too.
Yeah. But the way that it harmed you, I think, is what the dream is asking you to reexamine and distribute that energy back into the universe. Stop carrying around this notion of pass fail mm-hmm. and that you fall heavier on the fail side somehow. And, you know, for me in the dream where you are like having to study everything all at once and get it and know it, and everybody else is like, it's fine. It's just your ego that's harmed, right? You have all these other parts. It's not like some huge injury. Everyone else in the dream is cool. Mm-hmm. But it really touched your ego deeply.
And I feel the anxiety.
Yeah.
Like I'm very, well, even speaking about it, I feel the anxiety I felt in the dream.
So can we make an arrangement, you and I, that you are not going to set yourself up as either a pass or fail again?
I would love to.
A contract.
Yeah.
With yourself. If this thing comes up where if I do this, I pass, and if I don't do it right, I fail, mm-hmm. you step back and go, oh, wait, what's the setup? I'm not allowed to do this.
I'm not allowed to do that.
I'm setting this down. And if something comes to you where you feel like you have to learn, you know, 100 pages in 5 seconds, it's also the same trap. Mm-hmm. The way that, you knew what you wanted to do is the same voice that will help you know what you need to know, even when you haven't studied. Mm. And that voice always tells the truth, and it always speaks quietly, and it's always gentle.
Noise can cover it.
We can, yes, mm-hmm. but we can't extinguish it.
No.
And that's another reason why I, you know, highly recommend if you find yourself ruminating about something, you remember, you know, I have absolutely no capacity to change the future or organize the future or do anything in the future. I can't plant a tree in the future. There's nothing I can do in the future.
Yeah.
So if I'm in the future and I find myself there, I am going to be anxious. And by the way, people who are stuck are in the past. Mm-hmm. That's what they're ruminating about. That makes you stuck. Mm-hmm. So those two kinds are prohibited as soon as you realize that you're doing it. It's like you are in the room, you shut the door and you go, you know what? I'd rather count socks, watch a movie, bake a cake. I'm going to do something else that makes it impossible for me to go back in that room.
That's like that.
Too big of a challenge. And I used to count up to 100 and down from 100 when I found myself in the room. And then for years afterwards, I would like find myself at 42 and not even realize like the whole mechanism was connected, right? But it worked really well because it's hard to count backwards from 100 without concentrating.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd find myself going up and being at like 40 something or 60 something. And, oh, I must have been in the room. I don't even remember.
Becomes habitual at that point.
Yeah. And a discipline of, you know, I'm in charge of how I spend my time here. This is my life.
And in charge of the genuine cognitive thinking too, yes. Which I think white noise at the outside world can really blur that for us too. I think a lot of the time outward influences or what.
Well, I'm super anxious if mm-hmm. you want to know about the way that the phones are affecting people.
Oh, I'd love to go back to just a flip phone. Bring back that hot pink razor, please and thank you.
Yeah, I worry about it on various fronts, the radiation, the blue light, mm-hmm. Our vision, and, you know, that most of the algorithms are like the system itself. It's designed to crush you.
Designed to crush you and make you spend your money.
Or really? Yeah, both like to it's, be a it's, consumer yeah. battery, basically.
Exactly, and just like this ongoing kind of
So we have to be mindful mm-hmm. because I think, you know, Instagram has become the way to communicate, to advertise. It's what it is right now. Mm-hmm. But like all platforms, it will dissolve and something new will take its place.
Of course.
Sure.
Of course. It's a matter of a year from now.
It will last forever. So our investment in it, you know, it matters. Like you can't get that invested in it. You kind of have to see the flip funny side of like,
that I'm proud to announce that I'm very capable of putting my phone down.
Yes.
It's on airplane mode right now. And sometimes,
so it's exactly the same thing with the ruminating. Ooh, I've been on this too long. I'm putting it down. I'm walking away. And even if I only count the socks in my sock drawer, it's mm-hmm. time better spent.
Yeah.
Because I'm here in the present doing a mindful practice.
I like that.
There's this concept in yoga that I love called dharana, which is the joy in concentration. And it's this, I think you probably have felt the experience of when you get to do something that you're really, really into and you can fully commit and you don't have anything that's going to disturb you.
And if someone tries to, it just pings right off. You don't even hear it.
Hopefully. Hopefully. It depends if it's one of your little ones. Yeah. But that, I think, is the thing that you had. And this dynamic from school and institutions disturbed it. And instead of the gibberish experience, you tried to decipher, right? You were constantly trying to figure out what, how does this, why? You know, it just was against your very essence. Mm-hmm. So it's still working against you on some level, or you wouldn't be dreaming about it recurrently. And that's why sometimes just talking about the dream makes go away, by the way. Like often people will never have a recurrent dream again if they work with me. But I like the idea of a ritual because you are formally ending your university education with the understanding that you had multiple aptitudes that were not appreciated mm-hmm. and that the things that you didn't do well don't matter at all.
No, they don't define me. Even now, looking
back. But they don't matter. They're totally inconsequential. Mm-hmm. I have never, ever had anyone ask me what mark I got at Sarah Lawrence. You know, like, how'd you do in English in a job interview? No, nobody asks you that. You know, when I went looking for work after my master's, nobody wanted to see my report card.
It's so true.
Like, no one has any interest.
I feel like that really only happens when you're, you know, in the Ivy.
But that's the system.
Situation.
Right? Yeah. That's the system. Columbia is an Ivy League school. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever asked me how you did at Columbia. Nobody asks. What was your
like top of your class, bottom of your class? Who's stopping you from lying and saying top of the class?
But nobody cares.
Asks. Yeah,
they don't. They don't. It doesn't matter. And so if we attach to something that it does matter when it's against our purpose, when we don't believe in it, it's a drag on our energy. We have to be really careful not to do that. Because as we get older, we have less and less. And so you have to tell yourself the truth.
Yeah.
And somewhere in here, there's some kind of lie that you've been telling yourself about yourself that you have to tell yourself the truth about.
I'd love to figure out what that is.
The lie?
Yeah.
That you failed.
But I did fail. I failed a lot. Not in the, I failed myself. It's like the genuine... I mean, I can count on two hands how many classes I failed. It didn't bother me to repeat them, but, you know, some I just eventually let go of.
When you say it didn't bother me to repeat them, I would like to add, you had no choice.
No, that's true. but it became a mountain for me to climb and a really proud one to finish.
Right, but it's so outside of who you are. It's so outside of who you are. It's not something that you need to do.
They were never classes I would have chosen on my own. They were never classes I would have.
And you can't use anything from it, right? Nothing. And it costs you so much, right, to have to do this over and over again. Something that, you know, it's like moving rocks from one side of a courtyard to the other side of a courtyard and then being told you have to move the rocks back to the other side of the courtyard. Like, it's rock moving. What's the point? Right. And to be proud that you did it, I think, is part of the larger, you know, my family wants me to get an education. It's important that I complete my degree. Okay. All of those things are fine. you know, everybody is okay to want to get out, right? It's fine to want the piece of paper, but how you speak to yourself about how you did, I have to ask you to change it because it's false to yourself. You actually are very laissez-faire. You actually don't give a flying F. And none of it ever mattered. It only mattered because you wanted the piece of paper. You wanted to get the thing finished, right?
And I wanted the praise too, I think too.
Of finishing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Raquel, are you finished? Is it finished? Did you finish? Is it over?
Is anything ever finished?
Yeah. Well, hopefully your college is finished.
Yeah, that's finished. Yeah. And I got the piece of paper.
Yeah.
I got two pieces of paper, actually.
That's right. You got all your pieces of paper. And you don't have to work with that system again unless you choose to. And if you do, I don't want you walking in with a pass-fail attitude because that attitude does not serve your truth. It's against you, right? Carrying it is like bearing a weight you can't carry. That's the thing I want you to put down because you don't believe in that actually. And you had to, they made you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a yoke. And I think it's costing you some energy and making you feel like held back in a certain way.
100%. 100%. I'm even feeling that sitting here listening to that.
Yeah, I feel it. That's why I'm telling you. Yeah.
It's appreciated. Definitely.
Who you are in the world has nothing to do with your marks ever. And
it's weird to hear that out loud.
It really doesn't, though.
I know.
It doesn't. And, you know, there are certainly people, you know, who are super smart, who do super well in school, who can't talk to another person. I've worked with them. So, you know, it doesn't mean that the people who got all the pieces of paper and got all of the grades are having some kind of easy life. You know, they can have other difficulties that they struggled with throughout university that made it a hell.
Absolutely.
So the whole system needs to be reworked so that it's about children as opposed to housing children. And they make a lot of money housing us.
Oh, yeah.
So the incentive is not to support us to get out quickly. It's actually the opposite.
To harness it.
Yeah. If you need to stay here for 8 years, you know, that's another 200 grand. We'll take it.
Yeah.
It's a business. It's very unfortunate. You know, do I want my children to go to university? Yes. But if they chose that, you know, that was not their path, I would be fully accepting of the education they would get in the world. And I hope that that's what you think about more, the education that you got in the world.
Yes. I actually, I do truly think that. And when I look at education I did get in the world, I don't just look at it through the actual schools or institutions that I went to. I look at it through my travels, my time abroad.
Right.
I'm very lucky to say I've lived in three different countries, technically four, if you count a summer abroad. And to me, that's actually where I pull what I think is most of my education.
Of course,
the rest is a classroom and a teacher. And let's take my little excerpt about CAD. You know, my first class, I had a teacher, I couldn't stand her. We didn't speak the same language. We didn't understand each other. The second time I took it, it was like night and day. It was like struggling to get by with a 20%. And then all of a sudden I'm getting high 80s, low 90s. And it's fully just the teacher. So education to me is quite compartmentalized. In that sense, there's education in the classroom, and then there's education about oneself and who they are in the world outside of the classroom.
Well, your lived experience is very important because that's actually what you are doing, right?
They don't tell you that, though, when you're younger.
No,
they tell you who you are and what you do in this class is who you become when you're older.
Yeah, that if you're, you know, a bad student now, you'll have a bad life later. And it's a lie. It's a total lie.
Completely.
And they shouldn't be able to say it. And there shouldn't be grades.
It's a scare tactic. It is, too.
Well, you've internalized some of it. Mm-hmm.
That's
the problem, because you don't believe in it, right? We wouldn't be having this dream if this was all okay with you.
Yeah.
It isn't okay with you. It's causing a disturbance on the inside, you know, where in your inner world, there's this like rotating anxiety dream of, you know, at the last minute, I'm going to have to know stuff I can't possibly know because I didn't learn it because of various reasons. And it's a pass fail and mm-hmm. I have to do it now. And tomorrow is now.
Mm-hmm. Essentially.
So I feel that anxiety, and I just am telling you that the root is not from you, but from you trusting a system to tell you the truth.
That trust needs to be shattered.
Yeah. Well, they betrayed you.
Yeah.
They betrayed us. They're not telling us the truth. It does not matter.
It's quite sad, isn't it? In that sense. You know, you go through your whole life thinking one way and it's just complete bollocks.
Well, I certainly felt good about my grades for a really long time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I felt, you know, I think it was around 14 that I came into my intuition and I felt it in the room and it was awful.
I feel like there's an awareness that we innately get around that time too.
Yes, you know? Our inner voice.
Yeah.
Well, we hear it when we're children loud, mm-hmm. but, they do try and drown it out.
Sad.
So would you consider the exercise that the dream is asking, which is no more last minute, I have to know everything, pass, fail, anything that feels like that, you put down and walk away from?
Absolutely. Good. Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
And I think if you do, you won't have the dream again.
That'd be really nice.
Yeah, that's the thing about returning
to have. It's just like, why? I thought I was past this, 10 years past this.
Well, interestingly, most people don't realize that your dreams are a narrative ongoing, and you have chapters and new chapters. And so you'll have certain themes that will reappear throughout your dreams, and sometimes characters that you'll recognize from other dreams and be like, I don't know that person, but I know I dreamt about them before, right? And it's part of a story, but because we have lost the practice of recording our dreams on a regular basis, speaking about our dreams so that we're keeping track of these narratives in some way, mm-hmm. we've lost that these things are true. So the dreams that we do remember are often the ones we like the least because they make us remember them.
Well, it like almost scars you, right? Like you're a little, you become scared. Like I don't want to speak for everyone else, but for me, when I have a nightmare, they tend to scare me awake.
Right. Because the inner self
and
is
that's
saying,
why it sticks with me, because something frightened me.
Right. But that's, you know, when I was doing the radio show, every single dream, except for I think one in years, mm-hmm. was a nightmare that mm-hmm. woke someone up because you're disturbed. And if someone says they can help you understand your dream, you like call in. Like,
absolutely.
You want to know.
If you can conquer a fear, if you can get over something, I mean,
but it isn't a
want?
Punishment. It isn't. Mm-hmm. It's the inner self asking you, can you please wake up to these feelings? And can you see the context that I've offered for you to see yourself? And look at this context. You have this happy room of people who are all like, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to work out.
Like literally, my brother was behind me DJing a turntable. I have never seen him do that before. And then my husband gets up and starts dancing like we're at a Greek wedding.
Right.
And I'm like, I need to finish this exam. God
right.
damn.
But it's just you, which means it's an ego injury. And the dreams were always just our ego. We're the... Mm-hmm. We don't get to play other parts. We play our ego. So it's an ego injury. And, you know, those are solvable. They're very solvable. Yeah, totally mm-hmm. solvable. And it's your conscious attention to, I really mustn't do this anymore. This is like old shit. And for me anyway, if I really create like a look at all of this and grieve, like it took me a while to figure out that this went with this and that went with that, but I did the emotional archaeology. I do know that now. Mm-hmm. And I accept that I had to grow this, this was for my growth. I needed to have all this stuff happen so I could get to here. But now I would like to turn over this toxic stuff back to the universe and let it turn into something else because I don't want it anymore. I don't want to be with it anymore. I think I've played with it long enough. I think I've visited with it long enough.
Stayed with you long enough. Time for the new.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an excellent dream. And I think, you know, it could be helpful to people to think about how they push themselves and tell themselves things that, you know, they actually don't believe in. It's so interesting to discover something in the self that's like a needle, you know, that's like causing this.
Well, it's like a brain. It's almost like a form of brainwashing that you deeply know at the end of the day you're against.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like I've always been one to say, the school system was never for me.
Right.
SATs. You could ask me to give a one-man performance of anything I've ever seen, read, or done, and I'll nail it. But the second you ask me to write an exam, I'm back in the Stone Ages.
Well, luckily a standardized test seemed to be going the way of the dodo bird.
Oh, thank God.
Seems like they've finally figured out that they're completely unfair and biased.
And also easy to cheat, too.
Or something. Yeah. Luckily, things are changing for our children going forward. However, it's the inside of Raquel
that needs to change
that we're talking about. And so I'm, you know, offering to those who are listening the possibility that you might have something inside of you that you actually don't believe in, that you're telling yourself you have to live by. And you must remove that thing, put it out in front of you, and have a good look at what that's telling you to do. Because if you don't believe in it, you can't be doing it. If you know it's a lie, you can't do it. It will cost you too much. And it'll free up a lot of energy to let this go. You'll be able to see yourself doing more. It'll free up a lot of creative space for you, which I can feel already is happening. So I'm excited for...
My hairs are on their end and I feel like there's a...
Something's moving. I can feel it too. I can feel it too. I hope when we record season two, you'll come back and bring another dream so we can see the new chapter.
I would love that. I think I am actually a very lucky person. I remember 90% of my dreams, good or bad.
The reason is because you sleep still.
Mm-hmm.
People who sleep still have more access to their dreams because the kinesthetic body is dreaming. It thinks we're doing it.
And I write them down, especially when I love them.
That's nice.
I sleep with the little mole pad next to my bed and there's always a pen or a pencil somewhere. And if I don't scribble it down just when it happens, I'll repeat it throughout the day to someone else or in my mind.
To keep it so you can write it. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
That's
especially really good practice. The good ones. Those are good to read on a bad day.
Well, listeners, listen to Raquel and write your dreams down, and especially the good ones, and talk to people about them and think about the way that questions help you understand what it is that's happening in a dream. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for those of you who have made it this far, please follow, like, and share. Thank you so much.